To be happy in every life we have.
Good afternoon. This is Gail Moskowitz, and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I hope all of you are well today. The beautiful weather outside, I think, helps us all to just have a little, a better attitude about life. I can actually speak for myself when I tell you that the better weather definitely gives me a better attitude about life. It just feels so beautiful out. So I hope you enjoy the day. Tomorrow it's going to be a little chilly again, and I hear they're even calling for rain. But you did not tune in for a weather report. You tuned in for up-to-date information about mental health matters. Excuse me. So, thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I've been privileged to practice in the Richmond community for many years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health and interpersonal relations, addiction, sex, and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Psychological issues are complex, and they are often misunderstood. You know, all of us have issues. Sometimes we get sad. Sometimes we make bad decisions. We perhaps use substances when we wished we didn't. We feel guilty for our behavior. All of us have experienced some sadness or depression, anxiety or panic. All of us know what it's like to feel peer pressure, to experience loss. Yet, as a society, we have a hard time talking about these issues. We make fun of people who are struggling psychologically, and we judge other people for their behavior. And what I would like to do on this show, what I like to do is each week, I like to introduce a topic and discuss that topic either by myself or with a knowledgeable guest. And then I like for you to have the ability to call in or weigh in on the topic, ask your questions, or, you know, even to get in touch with me and let me know what you'd like to hear about. This week, I'm going to have my third show in a row on the issue of trauma. Last 2 weeks, we've talked about post-traumatic stress disorder, and we've talked about more acute trauma and the ways in which one can manage that kind of trauma in their lives and the effects that it has on them. This week, I am going to answer three questions that were sent to me in my email. And I appreciate these questions, not only because it reminds me that there are people out there listening, which I really appreciate, but also because these questions are universal, important, and I think that they will highlight exactly what we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks. So feel free to call me. You can reach me today at 649-9737, 649-9737. Remember, Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. This show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of my past shows, by logging onto my website, which is yourmentalhealthmatters. I was giving you my email account. You can certainly get in touch with me at my email account, which is yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Those are the letters, yourmentalhealthmatters, all one word, @gmail.com. If you go to WRIR's website and just click on the link to my show, you can get a nice, quick link to my website. So thank you for listening today. Again, the number is 649-9737, and I'm going to respond to a couple of questions that were asked to me this week. So the first question is a very thoughtful question, and just in case the individual who wrote this question to me is listening, I want to say that I condensed your letter, and it's not verbatim. I hope to God that I have gotten the essence of it, because it's important and I know you would like me to respond to it. I think I have. So she says, I am a 27-year-old and I have always been a quiet and mild person. She says, I admit I have always been a little fearful of situations and of people I don't know. She says, I tried to move myself along to be bolder. I fell in love with a house in a neighborhood that I knew had a high crime rate. I talked myself into renting the house with my best friend and her boyfriend. I felt safe in the numbers and also having a guy live there. She then goes on to say that 1 year and seven months ago, while she was walking into her house, she was raped at knife point. She says, I cannot move on. I am now living back in Richmond with my parents. I am working a marginal job, and her father would like her to move out because he's afraid that she'll never get better if she hides in the house. She says she has nightmares, she's angry, and most I feel like the reason I am afraid is that the world really is a scary place. She says that she doesn't understand why she has to get over being afraid. She feels as if her fear is the only thing that is keeping her safe because the world is a scary place, that she was right to begin with in thinking that she should be meek and mild and avoid things that were frightening. She says that she's fired her therapist because the therapist was not of help. She says she wants to be back to who she used to be, but she's really doesn't think that will ever happen. What are my thoughts, she would like to know. I can't tell you what a great question I think this is. So let me stipulate to this. You know what? The world is a scary place. There are things, there are pitfalls, there are people driving cars while they're texting. There are bad people out there. There are natural disasters. The world is not inherently a completely safe place. It is not. I will stipulate to that. So if your worst fear is realized, then why would you go back to trying not to be afraid of that thing? If your worst fear is realized, why would you want to put the energy into going back and talking yourself into not being afraid of something when clearly that fear is real? And it's such a great question. Because the world is scary. However, most of the time, most of us live in the world safely. Most of us get from point A to point B safely. Most of us interact in the world at large safely. We go to stores, we visit friends, we participate in activities, we travel, we go to school, we work safely. Most of the time, almost all the time. For some of us, we go our entire lives without really anything happening to us that is out of the ordinary in terms of scary. But the reality is that you can do the math, and the math says most of the time you are going to be safe. But if you are a person who is anxious to begin with, then doing the math isn't going to help, because you're going to have this belief that even if the math is on your side, most of the time we can go about our lives safely. Even if the math is on your side, if you are a person who is anxious, you're going to say, yes, except for me. And you're going to begin to have sort of this magical thinking where you're going to believe that you have less luck than other people. You're going to believe that if only one person in a room is going to accidentally trip over the phone cord, it's going to be you. And that you can talk yourself into other people having the math on their side, but you don't. And that is because once, first of all, you can be predisposed to having that anxious thinking and sort of being a more anxious person. And we've talked about panic and anxiety and fear before. And second of all, once you have been sensitized by having something happen, really happen, and especially something you feared to begin with, then it's hard to talk to yourself about the numbers, because you can always talk yourself into the numbers being against you, A, because you consider yourself an unlucky person, or B, because you say, well, if the odds are 1 in 1,000, then those odds aren't good enough for me because I don't want to be that 1,000th person. So that kind of logic then really doesn't help, because you can talk yourself into whatever you want to in that magical way that we can make thoughts be on our side, and especially when we're anxious. So I have to say to this young lady, yes, life is scary, and you could be the 1 in 1,000, and the numbers can be against you if you would like to believe they are. And all of that you can think about until you're green. You can think about it forever. And the truth of the matter is you have to think about it differently. And here's how you have to think about it. You see, this is your life. It is your only life. And if you try to solve the problem about trying to solve something you can't solve, that's an exhausting use of your time. This is your life. So the problem you then want to begin to solve is, how can I make this life the best I can? How can I do things that will bring me joy? How can I have relationships that will bring meaning? How can I give back to the world in ways that I can, that my time on earth will improve what is here already? Those are the questions that you then have to begin to ask yourself. And then you have to begin to recognize that there are certain things you really can avoid doing. Perhaps you don't ever want to move back to a neighborhood that has a high crime rate. Perhaps you can make that decision. That might keep you a little more safe. Perhaps you decide not to walk around by yourself at dark in a place that might be a little scary. That might keep you a little safe. Okay, so you can keep yourself safer. Perhaps you're not going to be somebody who wants to jump out of airplanes. So that might keep you a little safer. But all of those decisions aren't going to help you to survive this horrible thing that happened to you and get on with your life. The only thing that's going to help you to get on with your life is to begin to think at a deeper level really what you want your life to look like and how you're going to attain those things and how you're going to help yourself to sit with the fear so you can feel the fear and learn to tolerate the fear and learn to make the fear less all-permeating, because you have some control over sitting with that fear and learning how to let it wash over you. You have some control over how you want the external parts of your life to look. Then there are other things to do. Perhaps some medication would help to allow you to feel a better sense of well-being. Now, again, if you don't believe you should try to make yourself have a better sense of well-being, if you believe that the only thing that's keeping you safe are your fears, then maybe you wouldn't want to go get some medication. But I promise you that the only thing that's keeping you safe is not your fears. Your fears are ruining your life. So perhaps you need some medication. Perhaps it would be helpful to join a group of women who have been raped and be able to find a way to give witness to what happened and find a way to support and love each other and find a way. If you find your voice, you'd be surprised how you can and may be able to let go of this. There are some wonderful groups at the downtown YWCA through the Women's Advocacy Center. And I encourage you to be in touch with somebody who might be of help to you. And that if this therapist didn't help, find another one. And if that therapist doesn't help, find another one. But you have to keep in mind at a deep level that this is your life. And yes, you are right. This horrible thing did happen to you. And the numbers really are that this horrible thing probably won't happen again. But no, I can't give you a guarantee that nothing bad will ever happen again. But I can guarantee you that your life will be very, you will not have a good life. You will not get to have the life you had wanted to have if you continue to live in your parents' house and avoid the world. So some medication, a group for support, finding your voice, and getting a therapist who might begin to help you think, rethink this event in your life. These are the things that are going to be of help to you. You are allowed to heal. You have given too much of your well-being to this person who has already taken it from you. I wish you luck. And remember, if you send me an email, I will be happy to send you the names of some people who I think might be of help to you. Thank you for your question, and I hope that that was helpful. I'm Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters on WRIR. And the number at which to reach me today is 649-9737. We're talking about trauma, and we're talking about healing from some of the very horrible things that may have happened to you or to somebody you know. If you have any questions, I really appreciate it if you could give me a call today, 649-9737. So the second question I got on my email this week, again, I'm going to shorten it. So forgive me if I do. I think I have the essence of this. Is this question. This gentleman wrote, he's 29 years old, and he said he is a veteran. He went into the service out of high school, and that he was in the first wave of deployed soldiers to Iraq. He said while he was there, he actually was shot in his foot. But he saw a lot of other violence around him, and mostly he describes his time in Iraq the whole time of feeling scared to death. He was 19 years old, and he said the whole time he was there, he was just scared to death, that there wasn't anything that was familiar to him. He had no way of discerning of the Iraqi people who was safe and who wasn't, that it was as if he had been dropped onto the moon, and on top of it, all this violence was going on around him, and then just to add insult to injury, he was shot on the top of his right foot, which is interesting. And he then came home and finished up his time in the service, and he went on back to college. He goes on to say that he went to junior college, then he went to a four-year college, and now he is about to get his master's degree in education. And what he hopes to do is to teach middle school mathematics, and he'd like to be a coach. He goes on to say that he's a happy person, that he did go to therapy through the Veterans Administration, and that he was, that he's doing well. He doesn't have a wife or children, but in many ways he said he needed the time to do some growing up, and he believes that he has the skills to be in good relationships. He says he cannot sleep, and that this is the worst part of what he's struggling with, that he seems to be, during the day, fine. He's good. He's connected. He's sharing his life with people. He talks about what happened. He says he's affable, that he has friends. He enjoys time with them. And then he says he can't sleep. And he would like to know, he says that he has bad nightmares, but more than anything, he just can't fall asleep, that when he's quiet and when he's in bed at night, he runs things through his head that are just that he cannot settle down. And he asks if I have any thoughts about that. Well, it's an interesting conundrum. So the one question that I wished I could ask him would be, did he ever have problems sleeping before he went to the service? That would be my first question, because I really would want to assess if this is completely about his time in the service, or if he, or if this was always an issue for him. And then I would begin to say a few things. And what I would say to this gentleman is that sleep problems are clearly a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder. And it seems that he has dealt with so many things and has done a terrific job of getting back to himself. And so off the top of my head, again, not having the ability to really ask him every question, these are some of the things that I would say to you, gentlemen, to you. First of all, I would like to say you sound like a brave person, and I loved the way you described being in Iraq, that you were young, and it was just mind-boggling to you. As if you had dropped on the moon, and I can imagine that. And then I would say, perhaps coming home, dealing with your problems, getting into school, and keeping yourself busy and trying to be happy all the time is 90% of the problem, and maybe there's just a little bit you haven't dealt with. Maybe there really are still some things that sit in your psyche, that have shifted your psyche, that have permeated how you think about the world. And maybe those things have hit you even more deeply than you think they have. And perhaps it would be helpful to you to really think about what it is that shifted for you and your thinking about the world and your belief in humanity, your belief in yourself on a deeper level. And perhaps it might be helpful for you really to get in touch with how you've changed. And that perhaps even though you started out and still are an affable person who has a good attitude about the about your life and life itself, perhaps there are things that you're not really sharing with yourself that are a little bit deeper. I will tell you that if you go and go and go and go day after day after day without sleeping properly, that the fear of not being able to sleep is in and of itself a reason to not fall asleep. And sometimes some help in a sleep aid prescribed by a good doctor who knows you and can really monitor what you're doing. If you get a good sleep for a couple of weeks, that sleep begets sleep, and that might be something you just need to deal with and not feel bad about having to do that. That's not the end of the world, and that might be a helpful thing. The third thing I think of is that you perhaps have been inexorably changed, and that the shift to a sense of safety in the world will be slow in coming. And if you haven't finished really dealing with the internal psychological pieces of what happened when you went to Iraq, that maybe it would be helpful to get a little bit more therapeutic help. I know the Vet Center has a terrific program for vets and for where you share in a group, and that might be of help to you. So I hope that's helpful. I did get another question, and I would like to respond to it, and I will do so. I unfortunately don't have much time I don't have much time, so I will respond to it as quickly as I'm able, even though I think it's a pretty intense question. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. The third question that I have gotten is from this woman, and I'll really I'll give this question in a shorter forum than she gave me the question. She says she's a survivor of childhood sexual abuse that was perpetrated on her by her half-brother, and that this young man was 12 years older than she. She said that he touched her. He would come into his room, and he would touch her while she slept. And this went on for a period of 4 years while he was in high school, and then he graduated and left. She says she has never spoken to him about it. She did tell her mother, although she never told her father. She now says that her brother is dying of cancer, and she wants to know if it's okay to burden him with talking about this. And I will not give this answer. I'm not going to be able to give this answer all of the energy it needs, and I hope that you'll write to me again and that I'll be able to respond to you again. Or perhaps ask me, I might be able to offer you some names of people you might be able to see to talk about this. But I will tell you, yes, go do it. If he's still lucid and he's still with it and you can talk to him, I wouldn't go and be in his face about it. I'm not sure that will help you or him, but I think it's really okay to say to him that as his gift to you and your gift to him, that a dialogue about this might be really helpful for both of you and revealing to both of you. And I also think that if he can help you to heal from this, that would be a tremendous gift he could give you. In the letter, she says that she's never spoken to him about this, but they've been polite to one another over the years, and that it seems that he had gone on to live a decent life. And I suspect just from the tenor of the letter that you would like to do nothing more than to find a way to forgive him. She goes on to say that she has gotten a lot of help, and she does, although she hasn't been in therapy for many years. She thought she put it behind her. So I will say to you, yeah, go talk to him. But you know what? Do it in a format where you actually offer him whether or not he's able to, and then you might be able to let him talk. You'd be surprised what he might have to say to you, and you might give him a gift as well. So this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. Next week, we're going to talk about why some people always come early and why some people always come late to everything. So tune in next week on Thursday on WRIR 97.3.
Be happy in every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry.